All right, we're looking again tonight at the 11th century, the Centurions, sponsored by Becky and Avi Katz, Le'ilin Shmas Yonah ben Ravaya Leib. The 11th century was remarkable in the great Jewish personalities that thrived in what was, for the most part, an era of relative tranquility until the very end. Bavel had an immediate revival with the leadership of Pumbedisa of Rav Haigon, the last of the Gaonim and a world-class posek. He was so great that he could never be replaced or equaled, and with his death in 1038, the center of Jewish scholarship left Bavel, never to return. Meanwhile, Spain produced two extraordinary personalities, one whose career spanned most of the first half of the century, the second half of the century. First was the legendary Rav Shmuel HaNagid, who was the vizier, the prime minister of the Kingdom of Granada, so appointed by the king. And while serving as the vizier, he had quite a resume. In fact, he had quite a day. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Malaga. There he built a shul. His own home, which was a palace, had an enormous library of Sfarim that was a catalyst for the great Torah scholarship in the kingdom. So Rav Shmuel HaNagid would give the daily shiur, and then he would ride out to the battlefield as general of the Granadan armies. He had to review the troops, who were always fighting someone. And then in the afternoon, he'd head to the palace to advise the king on matters of state. That was a full day. Rav Shmuel HaNagid wrote the Mavoa Talmud, which we have in the Vilna editions of Brachos, right after the Masechta itself. And he was so wealthy that he almost single-handedly supported the yeshivas in Bavel. But of course, this golden era didn't last much beyond his lifetime. The other renowned Spanish gadol was Rabbi Yitzchak of Fez, who was born outside of Fez in Morocco, but lived and taught first in Fez, then after he fled in Lucena in Spain. He wrote the Sefer Halachos, which was an abridged Talmud that to us became simply known as the Rif. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak of Fez, lived a very long life, died at 90, and once he came to Spain, he dominated Spanish Jewry, and as the Rebbe of the Rif Migash, Rabbi Yitzchak Migash, the Rif Migash was a teacher of the Rambam, so there's almost a direct link between the Rif and the Rambam. But there's no figure that dominated the 11th century and the Jewish world thereafter, as did our centurion, who of course is Rav Shlomo ben Yitzchak. Rashi was born in Troyes in northeast France, a town on the Seine, in the district of Champagne, in the year 1040, the same year as the death of Rabbeinu Gershom. Troyes was a river town, it was a trade town. It was more of a city, even by their standards. It was known, among other things, for its manufacturing and its parchment industry. It's exceedingly difficult for us to relate to Rashi's greatness, the way he has influenced the study of Torah, as really no one else has for 2,000 years. Rashi made both the Tanakh and the Talmud accessible to the common Jew, such that now it is impossible to conjure what studying Gemara without Rashi ever was. How it was done, if it was done, it might have been just the province of a few individuals in every community. That was Rashi. For many in our generation, you know, it's impossible to imagine learning without an art scroll. But take away the art scroll, take away everything. Just look at the bare text of the Gemara without even Rashi, and there are few people these days who'll be able to make any sense of it. And Rashi literally holds our hands as we learn both Chumash and Gemara, and therefore is a companion to every Jew until today. Well, what was his early life? So again, like I mentioned a number of times already, the biographical data on our Gedolim are sparse because it's really not that important to the story. But such an astonishing figure as Rashi predictably has many legends attached to his early years. Parents were childless for a long time. One story relates that his father, Rav Yitzchak, came into possession of a very precious stone, a gem, that Christians wanted, either depending on the tale, to adorn a statue in the church or to put in the mitre of the bishop. And they lured him out to a sea on the river, and there they demanded it from him, and Rashi's father pretended to drop it into the river accidentally, and it was lost, rather losing it than giving it for their idolatrous purposes. At that point, Abascal, much like the one Brian just got, Abascal sounded that he would merit having a son who would enlighten all of Israel, and they had their one child. Another story is that his pregnant mother, they were then living in Vermeise in Worms, was walking down a narrow alleyway, and two carriages came at her from opposite directions and would have trampled her, but she pressed against the wall, which miraculously indented, saving her life. That wall became part of what later became known as Rashi's Shul, which has had a number of incarnations. Certainly his life, he learned there as a young man, even later in life, is destroyed in the 12th century, then again by the Nazis on the Kristallnacht, but it's been rebuilt again. It still exists in some form, although not necessarily as a shul. Now, as always, the veracity of the story is not as important as the fact that it's told. And we get a glimpse of how we perceive such an individual by the tales of his birth. With all the excitement in Worms, that miss of the carriages, the couple moved back to Troyer, where Rashi was born and raised. So his first teacher was his father, whom Rashi cites, according to most opinions, in his very first comment on the Torah, Omar Rabbi Yitzchok. Rashi raised the question, why does the Torah start with Bereishis Bara Elokim and not with the first mitzvah, Chodesh HaZelochem? He gives an answer, we'll get back to it later, about Eretz Yisrael, but he starts it as he never does in any other place in the Torah, in his commentary, Omar Rabbi Yitzchok. Yitzchok was his father, and his Rebbe died while Rashi was just a teenager. His uncle, his mother's brother, Reb Shimon HaZaken, was a disciple of Rabbeinu Gershom in Mainz, and Rashi went to learn as a young man, in his older teens, in Mainz. His primary Rebbe became Rabbi Yaakov ben Yochor, the Riya Yochor, and then when he died, he went to Vermeise, and there he studied under Rabbi Yitzchok Halevi and Rabbi Yitzchok ben Yehuda. In Worms he married, had his children there. But Rashi, growing up, interestingly enough, also had a secular education of sorts. Informal, of course, but invaluable in terms of his knowledge of Torah. And you see his breadth of knowledge interspersed in various parts of all his commentaries. Since Troyer was a merchant town that had trade fairs twice a year, major fairs, traders from across Europe clustered here, including Jews. And Rashi, young Rashi, learned about trade, about banking, about currencies, weaving, engraving, embroidery, agriculture, and especially given the location in the Champagne district of France, the winemaking business, ultimately supporting himself as a vintner. Additionally, and it really is an important part of the Rashi story, he had incredible personality traits, exceedingly kind and gentle and humble, peaceful. He was known for his integrity and honesty in dealing with Jew and non-Jew. Where he was, he had a reputation, not just as a Talmud Chacham, but as a saint, as a chassid. And he was cherished by the community for that. At age 25, Rashi left Germany, returned to Troyer, rarely venturing far from there for the rest of his life. At age 25, he immediately joined the Beis Din in Troyer, and at age 30, he founded a yeshiva that would rival and eventually eclipse the yeshivas in Mainz and in Worms. Students came from all over to learn with Rashi, and they began a systematic study of the Tanakh and the Torah that revolutionized the study of Torah. So what exactly did Rashi do? Generally, students came without copies of the Talmud. Everything was handwritten then, so they'd write their own. When they'd write their own, copying the text from one that existed, they would write their explanatory notes to help their study on the side. Rashi did the same thing, and in Mainz he had access to, as I mentioned last week, the Gemara of Rabbeinu Gershom, even for a time, as we know, Rav Haigalon had come and met the Rabbeinu Gershom. So he had the greatest teachers to teach him, the students of Rabbeinu Gershom. As Rashi learned in Mainz, he himself began a diary of sorts, incorporating all the teachings and notes of Rabbeinu Gershom, and those notebooks, supplemented and edited by Rashi and his students, became the essence of his Perush. As Rashi himself taught the various receptos, his students would take notes of the shir, which was almost a sentence-by-sentence commentary, which had never really existed before in such an elaborate, comprehensive form. Two generations later, his disciples were calling his commentary Hakuntris, meaning the notebook, because there were all the notes in his notebook now in a more edited and publishable form. So Rashi's style in the Gemara was, rather than elaborate on broader themes, which he does but occasionally, Rashi's focus was on elucidating the text, giving the simple pshat and the basic definitions, the words and statements of the Gemara, the simple ideas that each one was trying to convey, without exaggeration. But for Rashi, the Gemara would have remained a closed book to the average Jew. Now, for sure, Rashi was likely criticized by the elites of his generation for making the Talmud too accessible, such that students would no longer have to work hard, so to speak, at their study, but rather had it spoon-fed to them. But that's a criticism in every generation, including our own. There are also several notebooks, not one. That's why Rashi's texts are sometimes different from the quotations that you find in Tosafos. And the notebooks themselves underwent several revisions, and apparently in the yeshiva in Trier, Rashi taught the entire Talmud, or those that he commented on, three times. So the final product that we have is always the result of the third review. Not every Masechta merited three reviews, so others had to substitute and fill the gap, and we see it in a number of Masechtos. Baba Basra, Rashi's commentary ends on Chavtes Amar Aleph, and was finished by his grandson, the Rashbam. Gemara Makos, Rashi's commentary ends on Yotes Amud Beis with these words, Rabbeinu Gufo Tohor V'yotza Nishmasu B'Tahara. Our Rabbi, his body was pure, his soul went out in purity, it's the word in the Gemara at the time. Lo Peresh Yoser, he didn't comment more. Mikan V'Elach Lashon Talmido Reb Yehuda Reb Nosson. Then the Rivan finished that Peresh. Many hold of the commentary on the Nedarim and Nazir, and maybe one or two others in his name, is not actually from Rashi, but again from his disciples. The style is different, so the scholars debate that. Of course, it doesn't mean that Rashi didn't learn those Masechtos, only that he had not completed a third review of his notebook, so it wasn't published. Rashi also limited his commentary to those Masechtos that had a Gemara in the Talmud Bavli. If it didn't have a Gemara, like in Taros or Kutchim, many of the Masechtos there, so there's no Rashi at all, which also became the style of the times. We can't underestimate the importance of Rashi. Rabbi Wein always used to say that Rashi is like the parent holding the hand of a child, crossing the street, pointing out obstacles, dangers, clarifying what otherwise might be unclear. If there are different texts, and there were different texts extant, so Rashi helps us. So say, Lo Garcinon, this is not how we learn it. Or Hochi Garcinon, this is how we learn it. If a phrase is used in a way that deviates from its customary usage and might mislead people, so Rashi sets us straight. For example, you have this dozens of times. Usually the Gemara says, V'hatanya, it's a challenge. It's a question to a prior statement. Sometimes it's not. How would you know? You wouldn't know, except that Rashi says, V'hatanya, b'nichuso. Here it's meant as a support and not as a challenge. So it smooths the way. We don't have to think too much, or worse, err in our understanding of the Gemara by taking a word but Tanya appears thousands of times as a question, and maybe 100 times as the support. You wouldn't know it unless Rashi said it, unless you had other access to the arcane terminology of the Talmud. If a word was unknown, as some words were, Rashi gave its etymology, where it can be found in Tanakh, or talking to his audience, what the word in Aramaic actually is in Old French, the lingua franca of French Jews, to coin a term. Rashi's commentary was unique and quickly superseded all other commentaries. Yet Rabbeinu Gershom had a little commentary of his Talmidim, Rabbeinu Chananel as well, but none were as comprehensive as his anyway. When the Talmud was first published in Italy in the 16th century, so Rashi's commentary was placed on the inside of the Gemara towards the binding, where it has remained ever since. Exceedingly rare is an edition of the Talmud without Rashi's commentary. I saw one in my lifetime. My grandfather, Olav HaShalom, had an entire Shas. It was printed in Europe, I don't know, I guess it was 100, 110 years ago. Bless you. It was a whole Shas in one volume, but just the Shas, nothing else. Very small print, but this thick. It's a whole Shas, but no Rashi. Something I guess you carry in your backpack when you're on the run. The first dated Hebrew book, by the way, that we have is from 1475 from Reggio, Italy, and that's Rashi's commentary on the Chumash. But his commentary on the Chumash that is first published did not include a text of the Torah. As an aside, what is known as Rashi's script was a publisher's device from the 16th century just to distinguish Rashi from the basic text. It's a different font that was used, but it was used for Rashi. It had no relation to Rashi itself. That's not how he wrote. Now, equally glorious and indispensable was Rashi's commentary to the Torah, first on Chumash and then on most of Nach. Almost every book in Tanakh bears his commentary, although many say that the latter works, like Ezra, Nehemiah, Divrei Hayomim, are also not his. Rashi's approach in Tanakh and Chumash especially is very straightforward, as he himself elucidated in the third paragraph of Brachos. The Torah says about Adam and Chava, Vayishmu Eskol Hashem Elokim, Esalech Bagan, they heard the sound of God walking about in the garden, Vayishmu. So Rashi says, and this becomes the definitive explanation of what Rashi's motivation was, what his objective was. Yesh Midrash Agoda Rabim, there are many different Midrashim on what exactly they heard. Uchvar Sidurum Rabbo Seinal Mechonon Bevreshis Rabbo. And the rabbis already arranged them, right, everything in proper order in the Medrash. Uvishar Midrashos and Brachos Rabbah, other Midrashos. Va'ani lo vasi elo l'fshuto shel mikra. I only came to explain the simple explanation of the text. Ula agado hamiyashev es divrei hamikra. And to the agado, the Medrash that will explain what the pasuk means, davar davur al ofanov, each point in its proper place, in the proper style. That's his comment on Vayishmu. Umashma'o, he says the simple pshat, Shamu eskol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shoy Mesalech Bagan. They heard the sound of God, and then he elaborates in the other psukim. Rashi, in his Perush on Chumash, will define words, often using Targum Unkelus as his guide, but mostly he chooses the Medrash that most accurately conveys the simple idea of the pasuk. Remember that the Torah can be understood on many different levels. Rashi teaches us the simple explanation of the pasuk. Others later would elucidate on the philosophy or the deeper understanding, the Chachmei Kabbalah, but Rashi is the indispensable portal to all study of Chumash. And Chumash and Rashi became a basic staple of the Jewish home and of Jewish scholarship. Rashi explains words, grammar especially, chronologies, why some sections of the Torah appear to be out of chronological order. He'll offer sometimes multiple interpretations, dover acher, when either one suffices for the purpose of the text, and rare, certainly by modern standards, if he doesn't know something, he says it, Eini Yodea. I don't know. Eini yoda mamalamdenu. I don't know what this phrase means. So we know there's a problem, and we know how to understand the problem. The whole series now that's a fellow wrote, a rabbi named Avigdor Banchik, the title of it is called What's Bothering Rashi? In other words, you look at Rashi's statement, and to understand Rashi, it's not just a commentary that's read lightly. You have to probe exactly what Rashi's concern was. What would we have thought but for Rashi? What pitfalls does Rashi want us to avoid? In which direction is he guiding us in terms of the text? Those of you who studied under Nechama Leibowitz, Allah Shalom, so that was a career. A career. She would hammer constantly. What's bothering Rashi? Why does Rashi say this? If the choice of Midrashim, why one and not the other? And she would labor over it in order to ascertain what Rashi's idea was. And what bothered Rashi was not what bothered the Ramban, the Chule. Typical, just as an example, in this week's Sedra, I just really chose it at random. Oz Yashir Moshe. As Ashir Azoz. Oz Yashir Moshe, B'nai Yisrael, Ashir Azoz. And Moshe and B'nai Yisrael will sing this Shira. What bothers Rashi? Oz Yashir, then he will sing. What do you mean he will sing? He did sing. It should be Oz Shar Moshe. So Rashi explains. Oz Kishara Hanes, when he saw the miracle, Allah Bilibo Sheyashir Shira. Then the thought arose to sing a song. The Chayim, now he quotes a number of analogous cases in the rest of Tanakh. Oz Idaber Yehoshua. Uvayis Ya'aseh Levas Paro. Shlomo will make a house for Paro's daughter. Chashav Bilibo Sheyaseh Lo. He thought about it, then he would do it. Meaning Oz Yashir, the Yud, can also mean intention. Not just future, be present intention. But it means intention, something not done now, but is about to be done. Afkan Yashir, Amar Lo Libo Sheyashir. His heart told him to sing, V'chein Asah. V'yemur Le'mor, Ashir El Hashem. So to Yeshua, Kishra Hanes, Amar Lo Libo Sheyadaber, V'chein Asah. His heart told him. By the way, what does it mean? It means that it wasn't spontaneous in the sense that it was an exaltation. Rather, it was planned. It was thought out. The inspiration arose, and then the Shira had to be precise. Oz Yashir Moshe had precise, and you see, Uvnei Yisrael. He taught it to Bnei Yisrael before they actually sang it. V'chein Asa Vayomel Einei Yisrael Yoshua too. V'chein Shiras Habeir Shaposach for later in the Torah. Oz Yashir Yisrael Ali Ve'er Anu Lo. Again, it was present tense, but Yashir, the thought arose and would be done. The intention was there. Tough case was Oz Yivne Shlomo Bama. So Rashi says, quotes the Gemara, that Allah Belibo Livnos Vilobon. He didn't actually build it. But in that particular context, the very thought, the very desire to build a Bama was itself a sign of weakness of Shlomo. That's Rashi's first shot. Oz Yashir Moshe of Nei Yisrael. But then he says, Avi Midrasho, Omru Rabbeinu Zal, Mikan Remez, Litchias HaMesim in HaTorah. From here we see an allusion to the resurrection. Oz Yashir Moshe. That could also be a simple pshat. The time will come when Moshe Shira will be sung in a different context. Geula Ha'asida. V'chein v'chulon chutz mishal Shlomo. And we could darshan each of those examples, except of course Oz Yivne Shlomo Bomo. We don't need to wait for Tchias HaMeisim. Shlomo build on idolatrous altar. We shouldn't try to resolve this and say that it applies also to cases where it says it in the future tense but is immediate. Kagon, Kocha Yaase Iov, this is what Iov would do, or Apiashem Yachanu, they will encamp. V'yesh asher ye'anon, the anon will come. L'fi shehin dover ha'hovet tamid, v'nofil bo bein lashon asid bein lashon avar. When something will happen perpetually, there will always be in camp, he will always do, then it could use either the future or present. Avol zesh lo hoye el ishah, heino yachal liyashu v'lashon zeh. But this which is only now, it needs a different shot. One, midrasho, Tchias HaMesiv, next world. Another, Oz Yashir Moshe, it had to be thought out. It had to be planned. Then he sang. And he sang with others as well. In one comment, we have a pshat of Chazal, a drash Chazal made, and a resolution of a textual difficulty regarding the use of the future tense, but would have made more sense simply to use the present tense. Rashi does this literally thousands of times. How great was Rashi? Well, there are literally hundreds of commentaries on Rashi's commentary. I have a set at home called Hamaoros HaGadolim that contains the 11 major super commentaries to Rashi's Pshat, Rashi's Perish on Chumash, Rabbi Elie Mizrahi and the Maral and Lavush and others as well. And of course, Rashi's incorporation of the Torah Shebaal Peh, both in terms of Talmud and the Midrashim, and the halachic parts especially, underscore the inseparability of the two. So people learn Rashi, not only learn Rashi, but they learn Chumash, but they learn the Torah Shebaal Peh on the Chumash as well. That's what became a custom. A lot of people do Shnei Mikra HaTargum with Onkelos. For centuries, a lot of Jews do Shnei Mikra HaTargum with Rashi. Rashi's legacy, in addition to his commentaries, his tshuvos, his siddur, Rashi published his own siddur, his slichos, his midos tovos, his legacy also is his offspring and his disciples. Very famously, Rashi had three daughters and no sons. Each daughter married a great Talmud Chacham, and each was known in her day for both scholarship and piety as well. There's an urban myth that Rashi's daughters wore tefillin, but there's really no credible source that reports that. It's just a myth that's out there. His oldest daughter, Yocheved, married Reb Meir ben Shmuel, who was only 20 years younger than Rashi, and also went to learn in Worms with the Ria Levi. They were the parents of four sons and a daughter, including Rashbam, including Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbi Yaakov Tam, including the Rivam, and the daughter herself taught Torah to women in Troyeh. Rashi's middle daughter, Miriam, married Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nosson, aforementioned as the one who completed Meseches Makos for Rashi, and a daughter, Rachel, also married another Talmud of Rashi. Rashi had many famous disciples. Reb Shmaya was his secretary, recorded his tshuvos, and edited his notes, and his daughter married Rashi's grandson, Rashbam. I'm almost jumping ahead, but of course the Rashbam was another great parshan of the Torah. Rabbeinu Tam is the core of the Bali Tosfos. So Rashi's, we'll get to in a moment, Rashi's grandchildren and their friends, their contemporaries, lived on for another century or two. He lived on for another century or two in a very vivid way. Now the Talmud Rav Simcha Vitri, who edited the Machzor Vitri, which included both text as well as Rashi's Piskei Halacha, Rabbi Yosef Kara, who wrote his own Perush on Nach, and Rashi was also the great-grandfather of the Ri of Dampierre, Rabbi Yitzchak of Dampierre, who was born after Rashi died, but was one of the key Balei HaTosfos. It was the year of the Balei HaTosfos that followed the death of Rashi. The Balei HaTosfos assumed a primary role after Rashi's death. These were the additions, Tosafot, the additions, that often begin with a question on a statement of Rashi, with which one of his disciples or grandsons, typically Rabbeinu Tam, disagreed, or a question on a Gemara from another Gemara. So of course the style of the Tosafot is much different than Rashi's style. They're always exploring, they're always probing the Svara, the idea or the formula that underlies a particular conclusion. So it's very Socratic. I mean, any person who went to law school, encountered this in law school, But we first encountered it in the Gemara class. The Gemara of a certain case. And you extract the Svara from that case. And then Tosfos will say, what's the difference that there they said this, in a different place, in a slightly different case, they said the opposite. How could it be? And you learn to clarify, you learn to analyze, you learn to understand what the core holding is in each particular case, what the Svar is. What was the point of the machlokes on which turned the answer that was different in one case to another case. So Tosafos are essential to any true understanding of Gemara and are also invaluable in bringing to us different minhagim, as well as the actual case law as the Torah adapted to new settings and new circumstances. But without Rashi, there are no Tosafos. And without Rashi and Tosafos, the Torah would have remained cloistered in the Beis Medrash with as much relevance to the average Jew as Lahavdil canon law has to the average Christian. Rashi's last years were marred by the great trauma of the 11th century. I mentioned that it was a time of relative tranquility across the Jewish world, and it was. The tranquility ended quite suddenly and viciously with the outbreak of the First Crusades in 1096. First Crusades were an outgrowth of a wave of religious fervor that swept through Europe less than a decade after the resolution of the famous dispute between Pope Gregory VII and the Holy Roman Emperor Henry IV. Just a few years later, Pope Urban II rallied the faithful to retake Yerushalayim as an act of general penance. God wills it, he said, and the faithful warmed up for their journey eastward by massacring the Jews of France and the Rhineland in 1096. And Christians would regularly murder Jews for most of the next 9 centuries. Rashi was spared, although some in his family were murdered by the Christians. One famous legend has Rashi meeting Godfrey of Bouillon, a knight, papal knight, who would eventually conquer Yerushalayim. He came through Troyes, did not harass the Jews, although he did massacre towns in Germany. He met Rashi, and Rashi said, he asked what will happen here. Rashi was a holy man, so Rashi said he would conquer Yerushalayim, but he would lose it. His reign would be short-lived, and if he ever came back to Troyes after the defeat, he would not come back with more than 3 horses from his great army. That was Rashi's prophecy, to which Godfrey said, if he returns with even 4, then he would massacre all the Jews of Troyes. Well, sure enough, Godfrey conquered Yerushalayim in 1099. He held it for a very short time and limped back to Troyes, but with 4 horses. And now he's ready to stick it to the Jews. But as he's entering the city walls, a stone dislodged from one of the walls and killed 1 horse and its rider. So indeed he entered with just 3 horses, as Rashi predicted. That's the legend. It's interesting, but not entirely surprising, that as the world was coming apart, Rashi was able to continue teaching Torah and editing his commentary until the very end of his life. Like Rabbeinu Gershom, he insisted that Jews who had been forcibly converted to Christianity should be welcomed back unconditionally. And some say, it's a very interesting svara, that his very first commentary on the Torah regarding our right, Eretz Yisrael. Again, I mentioned earlier, why does the Torah start with Bereishis Bara? Why not with the first mitzvah? So Rashi says, to teach us that Koch Maslov Higi Le'ama Los Islam Nachas Goyim, teach us the whole world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He gave us Eretz Yisrael, it belongs to us. Where does that come to anything? It's an implicit rebuke to the Pope, who claimed Israel for the Christians. You can claim it all you want, but in fact the Torah of the Creator gave it to the Jewish people. Rashi died in 1105. He was 65 when he died in Troyes. He was buried there in a place that was recently identified as the main square in Troyes, long since paved over. The Jewish cemeteries throughout Europe don't have, many of them do not last long. It's actually the main square in Troyes. It was the ancient Jewish cemetery that now is a plaque saying Rashi's buried here. But in fact, Rashi is not really buried. Rashi lives on in every Jewish home where Torah is studied, and in every Jew who remains faithful to Klal Yisrael. He's not only indispensable to the study of Torah, but in many ways he's synonymous with it. He is, as the Me'iri calls him, Gedolei HaRabbanim, the greatest of all the teachers. That is our holy commentator Rashi. I thank you all very much for coming. Next week, the 12th century.